Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Wait till you see what I got, Brenda gushed to her friend Tova as they gathered their packages and headed for their cars in the mall parking lot. Well, don't keep me in suspense, Tova replied. Was it a real bargain? It all depends on whether you think an educational toy is a good investment, Brenda began, fishing for her car keys. It's this program that we can put into any computer or laptop, and it teaches the kids numbers and shapes and addition and subtraction and all sorts of stuff like that. I don't know, Tova wrinkled her brow. Didn't Tracy get something like that for her twins? As I remember, they gave it up pretty quickly, and they were 6 or 7 at the time, not 4 like your Teddy. Yeah, but I've been reading all about how it's good for kids to have a head start on all these math concepts, Brenda responded, and I certainly don't want Teddy to be left out if everyone else is learning this stuff. I know, Tova nodded. It seems like everything needs to be on a screen to be educational. Brenda shrugged. If it has genius in the name, how bad could it be? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about teaching math concepts to youngsters? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest knows a lot about teaching math concepts to youngsters. Dr. Elan Kohlberg is the Royal Little Professor of Business Administration at Harvard Business School. He received a Ph.D. in mathematics from Hebrew University of Jerusalem and has been a professor at Harvard University since 1973. He's written many research papers in game theory and probability and is well regarded for his exceptional teaching methods. Professor Kohlberg invented the DigiBlock program and founded DigiBlock Incorporated to develop teaching materials and methodology that present math to children in a simple and profound way. Currently, DigiBlock is used to teach pre-K through fourth grade math in more than 10,000 classrooms in the United States. Dr. Kohlberg and his wife have 2 grown sons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Professor Kohlberg.
Glad to be here.
So, what would you say is the most common misunderstanding parents have about how children learn mathematical concepts?
I would say the most common misperception is that math is about memorizing a bunch of facts and procedures, whereas, in fact, math is about deduction, logic. It's more about doing less than doing more.
So it's really a way of thinking rather than a way of absorbing.
One way I think about that is that our culture, human culture, stands on 2 pillars. They're like 2 foundations. One is the humanistic, one is the scientific, right? So if you want language and math, and the way of learning math, which is the underpinning of all of science, is different than the way of learning humanistic things like language or history or literature. And I think the greatest misconception, both of parents and unfortunately a lot of educators, is that they try to learn mathematics in the way of the humanities. So, for example, if you study great literature, let's say Macbeth, then there are cliff notes for Macbeth, and they tell you the skeleton of the story. But it's sort of dead and is uninteresting. What makes it come to life, what makes it so interesting, is all the nuance, all the detail. So it's all the nuance and the detail that takes you from 10 pages to 500 pages, which makes it come to life and makes it fascinating and wonderful. In mathematics, it's the complete reverse. If a mathematician proves a theorem and writes the proof in 50 pages, he or she may then spend years, and other mathematicians as well, taking down those 50 pages to 2 pages. Because the shorter, the more concise, the more beautiful, and the clearer it is. So it's an entirely different way of thinking, where the essence of it is simplification, reduction to the essential.
What learning situations have you observed in schools that work to the detriment of children learning math?
Children are asked to learn a whole bunch of procedures, all of which follow from a small number of principles, but those principles are not really revealed to them. So they learn each procedure separately as a bunch of steps. And that's very difficult. It's very boring. And it's not clear why we're doing it. There is an autobiographical novel by the French author Stendhal. It tells the story of a boy who obviously is the author himself, who was actually loved math. It was his favorite subject until they got to negative numbers. And they learned that minus minus was plus. And he didn't understand it. He didn't understand at all what it meant and why it should be that way. And so he asked the teacher. And the teacher gave him an answer which wasn't satisfactory to him. So he asked again. And the third time, the teacher got annoyed and just dismissed him and said, it is the way it is, and that's it. And from that day on, the kid turned off to math and never would do it again. And I think this is a fantastic story because there's so much truth in it. Unfortunately, there's so many super intelligent people out there for whom math would have been a breeze if the math were presented to them the way it is.
What are the fundamental needs that should be met in order for productive mathematical learning to take place?
I think that children must feel that they are in control, that they understand every step in the progression of math. I think that the teaching of math is destroyed the first time a grown-up tells a child, it is the way it is. So I think that the most important need for a child to learning math is to recognize that everything that he or she does, they understand the reason for it, that it's clear to them why they're doing it.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teaching math concepts to youngsters.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are discussing optimum math learning experiences for children with our guest, Professor Ilan Kohlberg, inventor of the DigiBlocks program. What was the genesis of your program, DigiBlocks?
My interest got awakened by the difficulties that a young child in my own family was experiencing in math, and trying to help him and thinking about what was the root cause of the difficulty, it occurred to me that things were not as obvious as I thought that they were. And that got me thinking about, well, what could I do to make it better? We were working on very simple addition and subtraction of multi-digit numbers, even two-digit numbers. What struck me after a while was that even though this child had received a lot of instruction and he could somehow solve problems, he really had no conception of what he was doing. And the heart of the matter is that he didn't understand the number system. So an expression like 45, 4-5, wasn't clear to him what the 4 stood for, what the 5 stood for. And therefore, the manipulation of these symbols didn't really make sense to him. And so I thought, well, the thing to do is to create a physical model of the number system. So we went down to the local store and we got some containers that had a flat top. And we got some playing marbles and we started to put marbles in boxes. And that was the genesis of DigiBlock. What I did with him was that I said, well, let's take a bunch of marbles here and we'll play a game. And the game will go like this. You take the bunch of marble and you're going to organize them in a tower. The rules were you put the marbles one by one into the first box, and then when there are 10 of them, you put the lid on. Since the lid was flat, now you could put a second box on top, and now you'd fill it in and then put another lid on. And the rule was you put the lid on only when there are 10. So let's say if we started with a bunch of 37 marbles, then you'd end up with a tower consisting of three full ones with 10, and the last one would be still open and have 7 in it. So there was 37 in them. And the writing of 3-7 became sort of clear, because what you were looking at were three full boxes and 7 in the open box. Then we went to addition, and we said, okay, let's put a tower of 37 and a tower of 21. And now I asked him, can you make a single tower of the two of them? And, you know, there was a little bit of thinking, what should we do with the two boxes that were open at the top, one with a 7, one with a 1? But it was very quickly obvious to him that he should put all the full ones together and the two that were semi-full pour one into the other. And so the 37 and the 21 became a tower of 5 full one and 8 one at the top and 58. And so he was able to do these problems of addition with such clarity as he never had before.
How did this child do when things got more complicated?
The most amazing thing, when we went to what's called regrouping, you know, where you, let's say you had 27 and 26. Now you put the four full ones together, and the two that had the 7 and the 6, you pour one into the other, you have 13. Obviously, that's what happened the first time. And then all I had to say is, but think about it, right? When there's 10, you have to put a top on. So he put a top on when there were 10, and we got the tower of 2, 2, 1, and 3. So he did 26 plus 50 plus 27 is 53. And did that without me telling him any rule or anything, just by the process of putting these towers together. Subtraction was even more amazing, because he had struggled for months and months in understanding what it is that when you, something like 34 take away 15, then you have to cross something and put a little one on top. That the whole procedure was just so mysterious. Whereas here, if you had to take 34 and let's say just take away 5, he would take away the 4 that were in the top open box. Now you need another one. Well, what are you going to do? Duh, as my kids would say. You just open the top container and take out the one, and there's 9 left in it. So this whole process of crossing out, putting the little one, became just a matter of opening a box, which is as simple as the mathematical idea is, because that's all that it is. And that became transparent to him. So I was elated, absolutely elated, because all of us who are in education, I think, experience no joy as great as when a student, be it a young child or an older person, suddenly has an aha moment. And it's doubly rewarding when that aha moment comes after a lot of struggle that has not been successful in the past. So that was the case there. It was absolutely fantastic.
So how did this system translate from helping one child to the wider world of school children?
After this worked magic for this one kid, you know, my own kids were then in school, their teachers wanted them to bring something for show and tell. So I recreated this thing. I made this a little technological improvement that the marbles were replaced by flat stones, because the marbles would roll on the floor. And now, in the setting of a kindergarten class, we tried it out now with a group of kids, and it worked amazingly. Here were these little kids. They were doing two-digit addition and subtraction with these towers. I don't think they were thinking that they were doing math. By the way, this is something that has remained. The kids who do digi, they don't think they're doing math. They're doing digi. It's like a game. Now that this worked so beautifully in this small setting, the teachers said, well, you know, this works so beautifully. Why don't you make something that can be really a product? What is it that I want to do here? Not to teach two-digit math, but I want to enable young children to see the whole structure of the number system, ones, tens, hundreds, thousands. And so I was wondering, how could I make this business of little stones and humus boxes and towers, how could I make that into something that would demonstrate to kids the number system well beyond ones and tens? And some time later, maybe 1 or 2 years later, and the key idea that I was missing all this time was that the pebble and the box should look the same. If you can design it in such a way that the unit that you count will look the same as the box of 10 that it contains, then you will be able to iterate the process, because the 10 will look like just like a bigger one, and you will not need anything new but repeat the same process of packing the 1s to make a 10, packing the 10s to make 100, and that's DigiBlock.
How have the children in the DigiBlocks program fared afterwards? Has there been a follow-up to see what's been going on?
There have been very few follow-ups because, with few exceptions, the DigiBlock program is not used exclusively. We have only one formal study in a private school in Boston, and that shows quite remarkable improvement in test scores of the children who have done the DigiBlock program. But I hasten to say that to me, that's not the big deal. The big deal is that the kids understand the math. I think the fact that they can succeed a little bit more, a little bit less in tests where the questions are very, very limited, that's not very impressive. What's much more impressive to me is that they have the understanding of the math that allows them to solve new problems that they've never been exposed to before.
And you're finding feedback from teachers where this is used that that's the case?
Yes. So, for example, several teachers have said that long division is a nightmare for a lot of teachers to teach because it's a procedure with many steps. Again, if you understand the structure of the number system, it's not very complicated because all the steps follow from a very simple structure. But what teachers have said to me again and again is, isn't it amazing when you teach long division by a single digit, so that's, you know, 357 divided by 5 and so on, and then you move to dividing by two-digit numbers, the kids don't even miss a beat. They just said, in the past, we always had to do it, you know, it's a whole new set of procedures to now divide by two digits. They just realize it's the same idea and they just do it. The even more impressive is the transition to decimal fractions, because perhaps one of the strongest practical aspects of DigiBlocks is that the way you think about decimal fractions and about whole numbers is the same. So as the kids progress from whole numbers to decimal fractions, they almost don't notice that they've gone, that they've made a big step, because everything is the same.
And it's this hands-on business that's really the core of it.
Yes, it's the hands-on, but you have to be very careful in what you mean by hands-on. There are tons and tons of what are called math manipulatives, which are hands-on devices for helping kids learn math. And I think they're all fine because, you know, if kids get to do things with their hands and things become concrete, that's great. But you have to ask yourself, well, what is the objective of that? What is it you're trying to achieve? And I think that with young children whose major task is to understand arithmetic, the hands-on manipulative has to have the feature that it makes the number system transparent. And most of these manipulatives don't do that. DigiBlock is designed to do that. You know, it makes the number system completely transparent. Not just ones and tens. Ones, tens, hundreds, millions, and backwards. One-tenth, one-hundredths, one-thousandths, and so on.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teaching math concepts to youngsters.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're discussing math learning experiences for children with our guest, Professor Elan Kohlberg, inventor of the DigiBlock program.
One of the earliest supporters of DigiBlock was professor of psychology at Tufts, David Elkind. He really loved DigiBlock, and he came to our very first training session and gave a speech and introduced us into his experimental kindergarten at Tufts University. And he was as eloquent as one could imagine in saying that he had written a book called The Hurried Child. His view is kids are kids, let them be kids, let them play. And yes, the computers are a game, but kids should also play with physical stuff. And so he was a big believer that DigiBlocks, by making the math physical, is really wonderful for kids. But I want us to say something beyond that. I think in the computer, there's something magical in computers and on the screen. Things disappear and reappear, and they change shape. And nothing is what it seems to be. Now, if you want to learn about arithmetic, all of arithmetic is really taking quantities, not changing them, but organizing them. So in other words, you have 357. The trick is to realize that those 357 objects, be they DigiBlocks or cubes, the way we handle them is we organize them into three groups of 100, five groups of 10, and seven ones. But nothing changes shape, nothing disappears. We just package them, organize them. Almost every person that sees DigiBlock the first time, especially if they have a little bit of a high-tech bent, they say immediately, why don't you do it on the computer? Okay. And we had several attempts, and they all fell very flat. The reason is exactly that a child needs to know that the blocks are there, that they may be hidden inside a box, but the same 10 blocks that now I don't see because they're hidden inside, they're still there. And children need to open the box and count many, many times to understand that. On the computer, you don't know. They may be in there. The other thing that is very difficult on the computer is the sense that the size relationship is not clear. If you see a block of 1 and a block of 10, block of 100, their sizes are dramatically different one another, especially when you go to the block of 1,000. You cannot feel that in the computer. You cannot have the sense of the size ratios on the computer. And most importantly is the weight. We have a block of 1,000, which when we first built, you know, we thought, are we crazy or what? Because we have a 1, we have a 10, we have 100. Do we really have to be that literate and build a block of 1,000? Well, we built it. Turns out it makes a huge impact on kids. When you see a 6-year-old or 5-year-old kid hug that block of 1,000, which is half as tall as they are and weighs 18 pounds, and they lift it up, it gives them a sort of visceral sense of what 1,000 means in a relationship to 1. That you cannot replicate with computers. Maybe one day you will. That has to be done in a physical way.
So now we know our listeners are going to want to know how to learn more about DigiBlocks. I know there's a website.
There's a website.
Which is what?
DigiBlock.com.
DigiBlock.com.
Yeah, either with a hyphen or without a hyphen.
Well, we are so glad that Professor Kohlberg could be with us today and help demystify learning math concepts for children and explain to us a whole new method that might be able to be tremendously helpful. So, Professor Kohlberg, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child: Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 471 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Evelyn Sachs Trust. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.